Good afternoon. It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from Signal Hill in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's a relatively balmy 32 degrees. We're looking for cloudy skies for the rest of the day with scattered snow showers. We're seeing them right now. Highs in the mid-30s, variable wind to 10 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with scattered snow showers this evening, then scattered snow and rain showers after midnight. Lows around 30, east wind to 15 miles per hour tonight. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak Community Theater continues during COVID. Catch limits for Karlik and Iakulik for Kings this year. They're going to be pretty low. Luxac finally gets its disaster declaration. And omega-3 fatty acids and Arctic ground squirrels. Moose and squirrel. All that and more after headline news.
From NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump is underway in the U.S. Senate. NPR's Brian Naylor reports a first day session is focused on whether the trial is constitutional.
The Democratic House managers arguing for impeachment played a video for senators showing Trump rallying his supporters on January 6th and then the violence when a mob stormed the Capitol in an effort to stop the official counting of electoral votes. At the end of the video, lead manager Maryland Democrat Jamie Raskin spoke.
You ask what a high crime and misdemeanor is under our Constitution? That's a high crime and misdemeanor. If that's not an impeachable offense, then there is no such thing.
Trump attorney Bruce Castor called the violence January 6th repugnant, but said that impeaching Trump would violate the First Amendment.
The ability to have free and robust debate, free and robust political speech.
The Senate will vote later today on whether to proceed with the trial. Brian Naylor, NPR News.
President Biden said he doesn't have much time to follow the trial since he's addressing more pressing matters, primarily speeding up COVID-19 vaccinations and getting a nearly $2 trillion relief package passed before millions of people lose their pandemic-related assistance next month. In the U.S. House, committees are working to draft the details of the stimulus proposal. And as NPR Scott Detrow reports, President Biden is working to build more support for his administration's top legislative priority.
Biden wants to include money for vaccine distribution, protective equipment, and direct payments to most Americans. He has, however, indicated he is open to scaling back the much-touted $1,400 direct payments for people who earn more than $75,000 a year. Next week, the president will make his first trip outside of Washington to push his legislative plan. He's traveling to Milwaukee, where he'll take part in a CNN town hall Tuesday. Biden and Democrats want the stimulus plan signed into law by early March and have made it clear they're fine proceeding on a party-line basis if needed. Scott Detrow, NPR News, The White House.
There's been a mass shooting at a health clinic in the Minnesota city of Buffalo. Governor Tim Walz says it's still unclear how many people might have been shot or possibly killed.
At this time, what we know is there was an active shooter situation and some improvised explosive devices. It's not confirmed yet casualties or those injured in this. The way that has been explained to me recently, as I was on with DPS and BCA, they have a suspect in custody.
It's unclear if any of the improvised explosive devices actually detonated. At last check on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 10 points at 31,375. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Community theater has been challenged more than most art forms by the pandemic. But the art endures, and so does Kodiak Art Council's upcoming performance of Love Me or Leave Me, The show is a collection of dramatic readings of love letters from the likes of Mark Twain, George Carlin, and Napoleon Bonaparte. The show will be run in three live-streamed virtual performances on February 12th at 7 p.m., February 13th at 7 p.m., and February 14th at 2 p.m. The performance will be directed by Jesse Marlowe and will feature an ensemble cast of Kodiak actors. If you were hoping to fish for king salmon in the Karlik or Iakulik rivers this year, you will have to wait at least another year. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced on Monday that those rivers will be closed due to continued low numbers of fish, according to area management biologist Tyler Polam. In their meeting in Kodiak last year, the Board of Fisheries identified poor king salmon returns in the Karlik and Iakulik as a stock of concern. Until escapement goals are achieved, which they may be during the fishing season, sport fishers will have to look elsewhere. The ban on king salmon fishing includes catch and release fishing. Rockfish limits are being reduced for non-residents this year by Fish and Game due to concerns over sustainability and increased harvest rates. Rockfish restrictions are in place for Eastern Afognak and Kodiak Islands only as part of the Kodiak Area Rockfish Management Plan adopted by the Board of Fisheries last year. Fish and Game warns that if rockfish harvests continue to increase, further restrictions will be needed, including implementing a rockfish season and reducing resident catches. You can see a map of the area limiting rockfish for non-residents on kmxt.org. Governor Dunleavy issued a disaster declaration for the village of Tuluksac today. The declaration comes nearly a month after a fire destroyed the village's only source of drinking water. In the interim, residents of Tuluksac have been drinking bottled water donated by private citizens and businesses. KYUK's Olivia Eberts has more.
After a weekend of mounting social media pressure, including from the band The Black Eyed Peas, Governor Dunleavy issued the declaration, freeing up to $1 million in state relief funds.
The governor has verbally issued a disaster declaration for Tuluksac. The declaration will open up public assistance.
That's Commissioner Major General Torrence Sachs of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Paul Nelson, who's the director of the State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, said the funds will go toward reimbursing agencies who have already stepped up, like the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, which has been fronting payments for initial infrastructure construction. Nelson said it took the state this long to respond because they needed extra time to analyze the situation. He also said immediate response is reserved for life-threatening emergencies.
To declare a disaster immediately when an event happens is usually only reserved for when the community is utterly overwhelmed and there is an imminent or immediate life threat.
In Bethel, I'm Olivia Eberts.
Omega-3 fats help Arctic ground squirrels stay warm during hibernation. That's the finding of research that the University of Alaska Fairbanks published last month in the journal Scientific Reports. As KUAC's Mary Auld reports, the study provides insight on how diet can affect body regulation.
Arctic ground squirrels are small rodents that hibernate to survive harsh winter conditions. The animals hibernate for about 8 months each year. During the long period of rest, their body temperatures can dip below freezing. Scientists wondered how diet might impact the squirrels' extreme hibernation.
Well, it's interesting to think how diet impacts us. Diet impacts you and me, it impacts humans. And often we don't think about how it might impact animals, or if we do science, how it might impact the science studies that we do.
That's Sarah Rice, lead author of the study and PhD student at UAF. The study found Arctic ground squirrels fed a diet rich in omega-3 fatty acids had higher body temperatures during hibernation than those that ate a diet that did not include the fat. Omega-3s are found in fish, nuts, and seeds, and in the diet of Arctic ground squirrels in the wild. The fat has gotten a lot of attention in the world of human nutrition in recent years for its health benefits. Studies have found omega-3s could have benefits to humans that range from reducing the risk of heart disease to easing symptoms of asthma. At UAF, scientists provided one group of squirrels in the lab food high in omega-3s, similar to a wild diet. The other group was provided food that was not omega-3 rich. Then they introduced the cold, dark conditions that induce hibernation and monitored the animals to see what impact the omega-3s would have.
What it does is it slightly increases their temperature when they're in hibernation.
That means Arctic ground squirrels might seek out foods with high omega-3 content before hibernation to keep their temperatures up during the winter. It also highlights the fact that fat doesn't just provide energy for the body. Specific types, like omega-3s, likely signal physiological changes like, in this case, an increase in body temperature during hibernation. The study also has implications for the role of omega-3s on human nutrition. The results of this study could give rise to more studies on the connection between omega-3s and human metabolism. For KUAC, I'm Mary Auld.
Nanana's water treatment plant froze up Monday, leaving about 150 homes without water for some 12 hours until city workers and volunteers got the system back up and running. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
Nanana Mayor Josh Verhagen says he and a couple of city employees got to work around 3 a.m. Monday so they could finish plowing snow from city streets before the regular workday began. He said in an interview later in the day that it's a good thing they got there early because they discovered an overhead door in the city's water treatment plant had been left open overnight, during which the temperature had plunged to 36 below zero.
It's a miracle that we happened to be early to see it this morning, because most days we wouldn't be in until around 8 o'clock. So it could have been a whole lot worse.
Verhagen suspects the mechanism that opens and closes the overhead door had malfunctioned because they tried to close it again Monday morning, but it kept reopening. And he said he didn't have a lot of time to investigate further because pipes in the facility were bursting and water was spraying, and he had to inform residents that they won't have water when they get up.
We needed to let everybody know because people were going to be waking up and trying to use their water.
Verhagen says he posted a notice on the city's Facebook pages that said, quote, "The rest of the snow plowing will have to wait. Huge emergency at the water plant. Burst pipes, including the main." He told people on the system to not use water and to keep their circulation pumps running and their heat traces on while repairs were underway. And he put the word out for anyone who could to meet at the water treatment plant to lend a hand. Before long, more than a dozen area residents had gathered at the water plant, and they got right to work.
Thankfully, we had our water treatment operator here and a couple other experts who knew what needed to be done and how to bypass the right things and what all the valves did, because, I mean, literally, it's like a maze of pipes.
At about the same time, Verhagen says he started getting calls from other local residents and officials, like Fire Chief Joe Furness and Nenana Native Association Tribal Administrator Jessica Shaw, both of whom offered to help distribute drinking water. Offers of help also came in from the Tanana Chiefs Conference, Representative Mike Kronk, the district's legislator, and even an aide in Senator Lisa Murkowski's office.
People really pulled together, and even without having to be asked.
Verhagen says the volunteers worked through the day patching the leaks, rerouting pipes, and fabricating workarounds. And by the end of the afternoon, water was flowing again. He says more work will be required, and until the system is fully restored, residents will have to boil their water before they drink it or cook with it. And the mayor says he hopes an overhead door repairman from Fairbanks will be in today to fix the problem that caused the whole ordeal. Reporting from Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Relief programs are starting to pop up, funded by the bill Congress passed at the end of the year, which included at least $200 million for rent relief for Alaskans. It's specifically for lower-income households financially impacted by COVID-19. The bucket of federal cash is so big, state housing officials think there's enough to pay rent for everyone eligible for a year. KTOO's Jeremy Shea has this report.
Alexis Ross Miller has been unemployed throughout the pandemic.
I'm waiting with bated breath and fingers crossed for the third stimulus check of hopefully $1,400. Mm-hmm. And Biden was talking about raising the pandemic unemployment or just in general. So, you know, it all helps.
She's been getting by mostly on unemployment assistance, but she's behind on her rent for a two-bedroom condo in Juneau. Here she is, just after learning about a new rental assistance program that could wipe out her back rent and help her for months going forward.
I think this is the miracle I have been praying for.
This relief program is a big deal for Miller, and thousands of other Alaskans.
It really is, because when we were administering our CARES Act program last year, we were able to provide 2 months of assistance to people that had lost their jobs as a result of the pandemic.
Brian Butcher is the executive director of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The state-owned entity is going to help put out 20 times more money for rent relief now than it got for housing grants in Congress's original pandemic relief bill.
And what we really saw was that many people had needs far beyond a couple of months, 6 months, 8 months. You know, they'd lost their job in March and hadn't been able to get the job back.
Butcher says this program will help the overall economy recover, too, once the pandemic is behind us.
Instead of having this huge burden of many, many months of rent owed that they'd have to be dealing with.
The details of the rent relief program are still being worked out, but the broad strokes are clear. Renters can get up to 15 months of assistance with their housing and utility bills. It's good for back rent and overdue utility bills since March and going forward. There's an income cutoff that varies depending on where you live. To be eligible in Anchorage, for example, a household, regardless of how many people are in it, cannot earn more than $95,800 a year. And applicants must be able to show they were financially impacted by COVID-19. The application period will open at 8 a.m. February 16th. An eligibility checker is live now at alaskahousingrelief.org. And there's even more money for similar rent relief programs on its way to tribes and tribally designated housing entities. The ones in Alaska are collectively eligible for up to $115 million. Colleen Dushkin is the executive director of the Association of Alaska Housing Authorities, which works with the regional housing authorities that serve Alaska tribes. For the renting public, she says it shouldn't matter much which pot of money their relief ultimately comes from.
Whatever happens, everybody's going to be served. And the pots of money is figured out in the back end. The public needs to know that if you need help, you can get help.
She says the timeline for tribal entities standing up their rental relief programs with this money will vary. Down the road, both Butcher and Dushkin say they're looking to Congress and the new Biden administration for housing relief to help a broader swath of Alaskans, including homeowners. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
The entire Southeast Alaska Panhandle will experience very cold temperatures this week, with wind chill warnings issued for Upper Lynn Canal.
The last time Juneau hit zero was back in 2014. However, the last time we actually got below zero was back in the winter of 2009.
Cody Moore, meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Juneau, says temperatures will range from 0 to 5 degrees below in Haines, Skagway, Gustavus, and Juneau. The coldest areas in Juneau will be in the Mendenhall Valley near the Mendenhall Glacier.
Cold air likes to pool in valleys during the nighttime, so then having the glacier just exacerbates that. So that's why we get 10 to 15 degrees colder than the airport, which is only a few miles away.
Temperatures at the Juneau Airport also are moderated by water in the Gastineau Channel. All other communities in Southeast, from Yakutat to Metlakatla to everywhere else in between, will experience temperatures down in the low teens and single digits.
It's going to last through the week. Tuesday and Wednesday are going to be the coldest days. Then we have a slight moderating trend through the weekend. However, temperatures are still expected to remain below freezing.
Winds will be gusting in the White Pass north of Skagway, prompting wind chills as low as 60 below. Wind chills in downtown Juneau will be as low as 40 below.
Bundle up, dress well, and if you have to be outside, just make sure you're taking the necessary precautions for dealing with this cold weather. Just know that in as little as 30 minutes that frostbite can occur, especially when wind chills are as low as negative 25.
Moore says a high-pressure system over northwest Canada is forcing cold air to flow toward a low-pressure system in the Gulf of Alaska. He says the colder and drier conditions may be helped by a cool La Nina now underway in the Pacific Ocean. The parent company of the proposed Pebble Mine says it is cooperating with a federal grand jury investigation. The company says the case relates to conversations about the mine that were secretly recorded. But who is being investigated and for what alleged crime is not clear. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has this report.
The company, British Columbia-based Northern Dynasty, issued a statement Friday that leaves a lot unanswered. It says that the U.S. Attorney's Office in Alaska issued subpoenas to Pebble Limited Partnership and its former CEO, Tom Collier, requiring them to hand over certain documents. The statement says the investigation appears related to, quote, previously disclosed recordings of private conversations regarding the Pebble Project, unquote. That seems to describe the so-called Pebble Tapes, undercover recordings produced last year by an environmental group. The mining company's statement doesn't say whether the investigation is aimed at the environmental group for making the tapes, or whether the target might be the mine executives for what they said on those recordings. The group, called the Environmental Investigation Agency, had investigators call Northern Dynasty last year posing as foreign investors. In multiple recordings, Collier and Northern Dynasty President Ron Thiessen bragged about their close relationships to regulators and downplayed all hurdles to getting their permits. They also described plans for a much bigger mine than the one they're seeking permits for. After the recordings were made public in September, Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington called for the Justice Department to investigate Pebble for discrepancies in how Pebble described the size of the mine to Congress and in permit applications compared to what they told the men they thought were investors. The Environmental Investigation Agency declined to comment for this story. It said last fall the recordings complied with all relevant laws. Pebble and the U.S. Attorney's Office also declined to comment. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Frankenfish could soon be coming to a store or restaurant near you, but you won't know it more after this.
Seafood Auction says thanks to longline fishermen and seafood buyers for a successful 2020 season and looks forward to working together again in 2021. Learn more at seafoodauction.net.
It's taken nearly three decades, but Frankenfish is set to hit supermarket shelves anytime now. The fish, which is the first animal to get approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, is an Atlantic salmon tweaked with genes from Chinook and an eel-like ocean pout. The faster-growing fish can go from egg to 11 pounds in 18 months, 10 months faster than normal salmon. Once the market normalizes after the COVID pandemic, Aqua Bounty plans to produce nearly 3 million pounds annually at its Indiana facility, the company told Undercurrent News. Another land-based farm is planned in the U.S. A smaller farm in Canada already is selling the genetically modified salmon there. Pushback to the man-made fish has been fierce even before it was approved in 2015, and it has steadily increased. Numerous polls over the years show consumers simply don't want it. Last week, major food service supplier Aramark said it will boycott the gene-tampered fish, joining the ranks of Compass Group and Sodexo. Also, more than 80 retailers have said they won't sell the salmon, including Costco, Walmart, Target, Albertsons, Kroger, and Whole Foods. Still, in other supermarket fish cases, consumers won't be sure what they're getting. No clear labeling will be required on packaging. Instead, the makers will be allowed to use barcodes or provide 800 numbers that refer customers for more information. The U.S. green light on genetically engineered salmon has opened the door for other creatures, at least 35 other species of fish, as well as chickens, pigs, and cows engineered to fit in factory farming systems are currently under development. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the ninth day of February, the year 2021. The sun rose at 8:53. It won't set again until 5:56 p.m., giving us 9 hours and 2 minutes of precious daylight. That is a gain of 4 minutes and 42 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this day was 48. That was set in 1929. Our record low was -1, set in 1984. We're right in between that at a balmy 34 degrees. Looks like we're the Hawaii of Alaska. We're looking for cloudy skies for the rest of the day with scattered snow showers and highs in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, scattered rain and snow showers in the morning, then rain and snow likely in the afternoon. Little or no snow accumulation tomorrow with highs in the upper 30s. For tonight, look for mostly cloudy skies, scattered snow showers in the evening, then scattered snow and rain showers after midnight. Lows in the 30s tonight. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide that just happened at 11:55 a.m. here on the east side. That was a 9.67-foot tide, just starting to go back down. The next low tide will be at 6:58 p.m., a -1-foot tide, pretty significant minus tide. Your next high tide will be at 1:32 in the morning here on the east side. That will be a 7.37-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 6:39 a.m. of 2.73 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a high tide coming up at 12:31 this afternoon. That will be a 15.26-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 7:21 p.m. That will be a -1.47-foot tide. Your next high tide will be at 1:46 a.m. of 14.52 feet, and your low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will occur at 7:26 a.m. and be 2.87 feet. Mariners, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A weak low pressure will persist across the Gulf through Wednesday morning, and a front will enter the western Gulf Wednesday afternoon. That benign-sounding synopsis is going to bring us some crummy weather. Weather supposed to come up tomorrow and not come back down till Saturday. Gale warning Wednesday for Marmot Island to Sitkanak. East winds 15 knots right now and seas to 8 feet. For tonight, east 25, seas to 8 feet. But for tomorrow on our east side, east wind to 30 knots will turn to the southeast and go to 40 knots tomorrow afternoon. Seas to 9 feet will build to 15 feet tomorrow afternoon. For Wednesday night, we're looking for east wind to 45 knots, seas building to 24 feet. And for Thursday and Friday, we have east wind to 45 and 40 knots, seas to 26 and 25 feet. On Saturday, they're saying southeast 30, seas 14 feet. Over in the Shelikof and Kodiak's west side, gale warning Wednesday. Northeast wind to 20 knots and seas to 8 feet with freezing spray right now on the Shelikof. For tonight, east 25, seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, east wind to 35 knots and seas to 11 feet in the Shelikof. Wednesday night calls for east wind to 40 knots, seas to 10 feet. And for Thursday and Friday, east wind to 45 and 35 knots, seas to 12 and 11 feet. For inside waters, not much better. Chiniak and Marmot Bays, Chiniak Bay variable less than 10 right now, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, southeast 20 will increase to 35 tomorrow afternoon. Seas will build to 12 feet tomorrow afternoon in Chiniak Bay. For Marmot Bay, variable less than 10 right now, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, east wind to 25 knots will increase to 35 knots tomorrow afternoon in Marmot Bay. Seas to 8 feet will build to 16 feet tomorrow afternoon. Kodiak Arts Council is thrilled to offer a free program for young artists age 4 to 8 called Cabin Fever Crafting. Free crafting kits are available in a tote outside the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium every Monday through Friday between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Each kit comes complete with everything that is required to make the craft, and each craft has a detailed instruction video to go along with it. There's no need to sign up or do anything other than come to the auditorium and grab a free kit from the tote outside. Again, that's 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday. There's a new craft and video available every other week, usually on Monday. Follow the Kodiak Arts Council on Facebook or Instagram to stay up to date with the new crafts. And if you have any questions, give them a call at 486-5291 or 942-5840. Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session tonight. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held virtually. There will be no in-person attendance for this meeting, but members of the public can tune in to KMXT 100.1 FM at 7:30 right here. And meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. You also have a portal there where you can view the live stream. Any questions about this, call 486-8636. And the City Council will be holding a regular meeting on Thursday at 7:30 p.m., also held virtually. And you'll also be able to find the packets and all the other information at the City of Kodiak website. If you would like to request printed materials or have questions, call the clerk at 486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181. Fax us at 486-2733 or email psa@kmxt.org.